Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the show, and now joining us on the phone is author Nigel Cawthorn. Thank you for being here.
That's my pleasure.
Now, Nigel, you've written how many books? Over 200 books? 250?
Yeah, it's around 250. I keep losing count.
Wow. So how did that start for you? I mean, that's a huge amount of books to write.
I'll tell you what happened. I got a degree in physics. And back in the day, they used to be, before like internet and ISDN lines and the rest of it, publishers used to have to send copy out to printers and typesetters. They're also outside London, and my job, I was a messenger to support myself during university, and I used to take the copy out and corrected proofs out to the railway stations that then went out to the typesetters and the printers, and then which worked overnight, and they sent back them in the morning. I used to pick them up and take them to the publishers. And one day I was sitting waiting for a package, and there was a notice board, and they were looking for a features writer on a magazine called Nuclear Engineering International. So I applied immediately because I actually knew something about nuclear engineering. But they said that was only advertised for union reasons, and they already had the guy to fill the job. But they gave me a job on a weekly tabloid that went to white goods shops, you know, fridges and freezers and washing machines and the rest of it. And they took me on, and they taught me how to write a 100-word news story and a longer feature and captions, headlines, and the rest of it. At the time, I was having an affair with a married woman. Ooh. What I didn't know was her husband was a gangster.
Oh.
And
is this New York?
No, this was in London. And, okay. One afternoon, she phoned me up and said he and his brother had got guns and they were going to come and kill me. I borrowed some money, and I got myself on a plane to New York. I had one phone number of a Guyanese family in Brooklyn, who very kindly put me up, and I worked with them on a building site there. And I started writing for pornographic magazines, and then a new newspaper started in New York. It was only a very short-lived, called the New York Trib. And I started writing for them. I'm like 23 years old, and I'm an illegal immigrant, and I'm writing for New York Daily. It was fantastic. but at the time went on, and I had a career in journalism with largely with the Financial Times. And I went freelance, and I was traveling around the world at other people's expenses and staying in hotels and having a wonderful time. And then to get my stay back in the day in New York, I got married. And one day I was back in London, and this child turned up, who turned out to be my son.
Whoa.
Okay. So, and I realized that I can't have this wonderful life as a journalist anymore, and I better start. I need to stay at home and look after him, so I need to write books. And that film, What's Love Got to Do with It, had just come out, with the Tina Turner movie. And as a journalist, you always look for the other side of the story, and I knew that Ike Turner had made the first rock and roll record ever, so I got on the phone, and I eventually got his phone number out of Ebony magazine, and I phoned him up. He just got out of jail, and I said, "Ike, can I do a book with you?" And he said, "Yeah, come and see me." He was in California, St. Marcos near San Diego there, and I said, "Yeah, I'll be there tomorrow." So I headed off with this child I barely knew, and we flew out to California and signed a deal. So that's how my literary career started.
So with these 250 books, is there an autobiography? That's quite the history.
Look, yeah, I write purely for money, and when someone offers me some money to write my autobiography, I shall certainly do it. otherwise, no.
Ah.
So do you pick your own topics, because they vary? Or when people hire you, or people ask you to write, do they tell you, this is what I wanted on, and you sort of follow through, or is it both?
Sometimes I spend quite a lot of time hustling ideas around the place, but publishers do come to me and say, like this Cults book that's just out at the moment, that they came to me and said, can you do that? I like to keep some of my own ideas, it's a funny business. I've done big serious books, like I got called in to testify to your U.S. Senate once over a book that wasn't even published in America, which was fun. And I was cross-questioned by John Kerry and John McCain. And I was kind of accused of espionage on this book, because I had lots of classified U.S. intelligence documents, shame to say, back in my flat in London. But I was telling a useful story, and it's a privilege as a writer that you can do these things and kind of take on your government. I did a similar book taking on my government. And they knocked down my front door and came and stole papers and stuff from me. That you could do that as an individual. You can stand up to these people and say what you have to say.
Doesn't that terrify you some?
Yes and no. We live in decent countries, and they don't really like going around killing writers very much. Even though I was kind of the Senate, the implication was that I could be tried for espionage. But again, in America, you don't put writers in jail. You just don't.
Well, not yet. That would still worry me. I wouldn't feel I could trust the government enough, even when you're in a Senate hearing, because it's always about, there's some agenda and some politics behind it. And so if you're on the wrong side of that, of what they want, you could end up somewhere you don't want to be.
Yeah, I mean, various lady friends of mine were pretty frightened and, about living with me and saying the phone's tapped. I said, of course the phone's tapped. I wouldn't be doing my job if the phone wasn't tapped. but I guess I was young and reckless then.
Well, you have not only the government, probably the mafia, don't you? You've written a book on the history of the mob as well. So wouldn't you have to worry about both ends?
Well, yes, but these are kind of more lightweight books that are done through secondary sources. That I'm not going through great files. I'm not sitting in your National Archives, or another book sitting in the U.S. Army Archives in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. I'm not doing that sort of work with the mafia.
Ah, okay.
I was asked to do a book about a local a gang here. I'm in Bloomsbury. Can you imagine this? That there's actually a crime syndicate here. But they're on their way But I was warned off doing a book about them. But I was told I would disappear.
Well, you're still here, so.
Yeah.
Because we all think Bloomsbury is Virginia Woolf and the Bloomsbury group. I did a book recently about the assassination of Lenin, and of course Lenin lived for 9 years in Bloomsbury.
What was the most challenging one that you've done so far? Like, is there one that's really been hard on you and taken a lot out of you?
Well, the one I'm most proud of, I wrote a book about the only woman who ever became Emperor of China, not Dowager Empress or anything like that. And she changed the dynasty name to her own name. And no one, she's as famous in China as Queen Elizabeth I in England, but no one, as far as I could make out, no one had ever written her story in English, and I got very lucky that there was the reason I live in Bloomsbury is I'm just 5 minutes walk from the British Library, which is the biggest library in the world, and I found lots of stuff about her in there. They have a big archive of that the Foreign Colonial Office collected back in the 19th century when we had a bit of an empire. I was working on this book, and I was taking back my research material to the desk one evening when a young Chinese gentleman on the side of the desk said, "Are you interested in this woman?" I said, "Well, of course, I've got all these books." And he said, "Well, I'm actually looking into her as well." I said, "Well, I'll buy you a cup of coffee." And I said to him, "Look, I've almost finished my manuscript. If you'd read it for me to make sure I haven't made any terrible mistakes, then you can take anything out of it you want for your own work." This guy came up with notes like almost as long as my manuscript. Who said it right? And the book's been published in Chinese in China now. So I'm very proud of that.
Have you ever got any kind of a backlash or anything back from people that you've written about, or like even in China when you've written that book?
I didn't get anything back from that. I haven't really had much backlash at all. I was once accused of I'd written a book about dictators, and I did a piece about a chapter on Chiang Kai-shek, and I was that was all over the internet. I was influencing the election in Taiwan, which obviously I wasn't. But no. I kept trying to think. Like when I've really got reaction. Sometimes the flat I'm sitting in here, and the reason I got called upon the U.S. Senate, it was I'd written the first book about whether American prisoners of war were kept behind in Southeast Asia after the Vietnam War, and I went to Hanoi and asked the government there, and they said yes, of course we did, and. Mm-hmm. And then when the book came out here, I was told in America there was no interest in this topic at all, except for lots of Americans were phoning the British publisher and buying copies. And then suddenly a picture came out of Southeast Asia, and my flat was completely besieged by TV crews and journalists interviewing me about it. But apparently there's no interest.
Well, John McCain and John Kerry would be definitely interested in that particular area. I see why now.
Yes, yes, yes. That's why I was called to testify. And of course, they agreed everything I'd said. I had the documents. I could track someone who was shot down in 1967. To where they were in the 1980s, by name, by camp. I'm sure the Pentagon could do that the same, but I could do it by myself. But it was as you say, it was a political thing, and no one could own up to it.
Mm-hmm.
I must say, when I was doing that, I was at the Senate, someone gave me Foreign Relations Committee report where they looked into what happened in previous wars. And this report said that in 1945, 31,000 people in British uniforms who were in the east part of Europe, when the Red Army came in, they were not returned home. Mm. They went into labor camps there. And when I started on that in this country, obviously everyone went mad. Mm. The security forces came to see him and everything. And it's palpable that's what happened. But no one's ever going to admit to it, are they?
Yeah.
Mm. Hmm. How was Ike Turner to deal with?
Oh, very charming man. Very charming man. With my little son, he's very good with children. I got on really well with him. It was difficult over money. We had a few fights over that. And we actually did the book in Los Angeles during the O.J. Simpson trial. So there was quite a bit of racial tension going on. I'd seen it before. And he used to take me to this sort of after-hours club where I would be the only white face in there. And these huge black bouncers would come over to me and say, "Who are you?" And I would point at Ike and I'd say, "I'm his long-lost son." But there's really no answer to that. And secondly, in America, as you know, that if you speak with a clear English intonation, then you don't get any trouble.
True.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you sound like you're with the BBC.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, it could be okay. Well, I was just wondering. So, when you come out of that, how did you? Because Tina Turner put out quite the idea that, in her story, that he was quite rough with her and he used to beat her and all that stuff. How what was your opinion?
Well. I think she's done that. There's a more recent biography out, but her original Tina didn't say that, and she condemned the movie in Ebony magazine. But my take on it was really that he'd essentially been.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Lynched by that movie, and I was just the counsel for the defense. You know, who can tell what actually goes on between two people behind closed doors? I mean, his story was that he just wanted to sleep with every woman in the world. Okay, yeah. He slept with her once, and then she wanted to be like his wife, and that didn't really happen legally. I think he was married 13 times, and was kind of short on divorces. He bought a house in Los Angeles, but he had his own apartment in his studios there, and didn't want to actually live with her. And she was always bringing food for him and stuff, and trying to be the wife. So I can kind of understand it. Again, what's the real truth? Who can tell?
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. Now, I also noticed that you have sex lives for the Pope. Since when do the Popes have sex? They're not allowed to have sex. How can that be?
Well. Yes. I mean, a lot of them. Remember that. You don't actually have to be a priest to be a pope. You can be a layman and be a pope. But a lot of them only took religion later in life, so that they've been around a bit. But my favorite is the first John the 23rd, because they often rename them to kind of cover up bad stuff. He started out his career as a pirate. And then he realized that there was actually more money in religion. Hmm. And when he was papal legate to Bologna, it said that he had a house with 100 concubines in it. Hmm. And he rose to become pope. There was a schism at the time. There were actually three popes, but he was one of them. But he was arrested and taken to Constance. To the Council of Constance, where he was tried. In fact, because back in those days, when there was a convention like that, that every prostitute in the whole of Europe went to Constance, because there's all these single men who have money. Where would you be? Well, he was charged with 53 capital offences, and he admitted, if I recall rightly, murder, incest, adultery, and theft. He was convicted, deposed, fined, jailed. He bribed his way out of jail and went on to become a cardinal again. You can't keep a good man down.
No. Sounds like Michael, actually.
Well, what I'm quite interested in what I write about are serial killers, and I noticed that you have a number of those in there.
Yes.
And then, so you have one on serial killers and then mass murderers. Now, on there, how about
two,
the,
I've got two.
Yeah.
Two on killer women, and there's an endless appetite for true crime, and especially serial killers. Everybody loves serial killers. I'm not quite sure why, but
okay, it's like profiles of the most barbaric criminals.
They're always good stories, though. I suppose it's that sort of that here are people who kind of step over the line. Which we all kind of wish we could sometimes, but hopefully not in that way. We'd rather be kind of rock stars and doing it, but that sort of thing. But with my sex lives, there's actually 12 in the series, and it really took off. I'd done sex lives with U.S. presidents when Bill Clinton got caught with Monica Lewinsky, and I've always thought he must have read the book and thought, this author needs some help. Get down there, Monica.
So you wrote that book before that event, that stuff, Affair.
Yes. Yeah. And Joan Rivers, he had me on her show. I did a lot of media in America at that time because I sound like I'm with the BBC, so it's like I can say things on American radio and TV that no American would dare say when it comes to sex, at least.
Sounds proper. Yeah, it sounds proper. Right? It's more. Well, you can have a big one when Trump is done.
Yeah. I've got one out called "We Two in the White House" at the moment. But the thing I always got away with back then with Clinton, because I didn't, the Clinton thing was kind of breaking, so I didn't know any more than anyone else. But I always used to say, well, actually, George Washington set a standard that even Slick Willie couldn't live up to. His first lover was a Native American lady called Bright Lightning. Then he had a long affair with the wife of his best friend. He married an older woman for her money, and the War of Independence was largely an excuse to play away from home. And in fact, there was a huge sex scandal during the war called the Washerwoman Kate Affair, which came out in the newspapers on both sides of the Atlantic. He had a congressman procuring young women for him, so you have to be a little bit careful what you say on American media. So I would say that when he came back from fighting the British, there'd be someone to administer the comforts of love to him. People knew what I was talking about. It was such a big scandal. There was actually a Broadway play made out of it at the time. And then I would say, look, there's so much of this stuff that I don't want to bore your listeners or your viewers, and I don't want to upset your school children, because I know they're taught that George Washington died because he'd been out horseback riding in the winter, and he'd caught a chill, it turned to pneumonia, he died. And I said, it's not true. He caught the chill in the hunt and hit his slave huts with a black woman. And you always see people behind the cameras going, what did the English would just say? Oh, dear. But you read the history, that's what happened.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what 18th century gentleman who had a lot of slave women, what would you be doing exactly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'd be difficult not to, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, boy.
It wasn't just Jefferson.
No. Mm-hmm. There's quite a few of them, I guess. It just keeps on going.
Yeah.
I guess that was a how was the things like when you've written on Hitler? Was Hitler much the same too? Is it something that all leaders do?
There was that too. But I mean, he was very strange. There are these mad right-wing people who look up to him. When you read about his sex life, no. He liked... how do I say this delicately? He was happy to sort of lie on the floor and have a woman kick him and...
Ouch.
You may have to edit this. And piss and shit on him, right? That was his thing, right? You would admire this man? I don't think so.
Wow, yeah, that's crazy. I didn't realize. I thought he was a structured vegetarian.
Yes, he was. Yes, smoked, didn't drink, and ate no meat. But yes, he. Mm. I think we can. He was a peculiar man, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Very odd.
Yeah.
All this was documented at the time.
Hmm. So David Cameron putting his penis in a pig head isn't so bad.
That's true. That's true.
Oh, that's crazy.
I was like the Winston Churchill story, though. That Winston Churchill, when he finally fell from power in the 1950s, and he went out to stay with his Somerset Maugham, in the south of France, who had been to school with him, and over lunch, Somerset Maugham said to him, "You know, your mother, who was an American, Jenny Jerome, you should tell me that you, when you were at school, you used to sleep with the other boys." And Winston Churchill said, banged his fist on the table and said, "It's a damn lie." He said, "The only time." I did once go to bed with a man just to find out what it was like. Right? It turned out that the person concerned was Ivan Novello. So Somerset Maugham said, "Well, Winston, what was it like?" And Winston pulled the cigar from his mouth and said, "Musical."
Okay, there we go.
So you don't know whether he's telling the truth or what. You know, it's a typical Winston Churchill story.
Now when you one thing I noticed, look, when you deal with serial killers or when you write about spree killing, like when you wrote the spree killer book, that's tends to be something that's very American, isn't it? It's not really something you're going to see in the UK as much.
Not very often in the UK because of our gun laws. It happens in Germany, Finland, Australia, Russia. It does happen. You are the world leaders in it. No doubt about that.
Nobody does it better.
Yeah. Or more often.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have an opinion on that without... Do you think it's just? You think it's part of the culture, or do you think it's kind of a combination of the culture itself plus being a gun culture and having guns? Or it's tough.
Yes, obviously helps having lots of guns, doesn't it? That other people. I mean, there's obviously lots of people who are terribly frustrated in various ways. In any country, but if they don't have access to firearms, they tend to take it out in other milder ways. You're wedded to your guns, and there's nothing can be done about that.
Mm. Yeah. So, and now you got a specific. How many specific serial killers? I see you wrote Jack the Ripper. What made you choose him
all on his own.
But again, that was you can see that's a book done with a friend of mine who's he's an Australian film producer and director, and he had done several films about serial killers, and he had come across there was a book that came out in the 1980s called My Secret Life by Walter. And it was sold as a classic of Victorian pornographic literature. In fact, that was a slimmed down version. There's 12 volumes of it in the British Library, and it was published in Antwerp in the 1860s. And I think there were only 12 sets done. But when he read it, he realized that the voice was exactly the same as the memoirs of serial killers. And we worked on it, and we managed to identify not only all the victims of Jack the Ripper in there, but also, after they said that Jack the Ripper was disappeared or died or whatever, he was no longer around, there was a series of murders up the river beyond, not in the city, but beyond Westminster, called the Thames Torso murders. And he could identify all the victims there too in this book. So we put together extracts from My Secret Life, and we showed that what had happened was there was during the 18th century as kind of syphilis took over. There was a market, a big market for virgins, and there was a lot of rich older men who wanted underage girls for sex. And when they changed the law here, it was getting very difficult. And the women who actually killed, though they were prostitutes as well, they were the procurers of the young women. So this book was sold to essentially a Victorian paedophile ring to both remind them of what it was like to have young girls, but also to show that they weren't going to be in danger anymore because the people you knew what they'd done were being killed.
Was this the 1885 Maiden Tribute Act? Does that involve that?
Yes, that's all involved. That's when the law was changed. Yeah.
Okay.
It was a big deal.
Hmm. Okay. So you saw. So it was basically this Walter. Still don't know who that would possibly be, right? It's just that's the name that came out.
We have actually identified him now, but we haven't got a deal to make a follow up book. Yeah, he was
so we can only say so much right now.
yes. We're still trying to sell it.
Gotcha. And then, would this Walter was he under the radar of Scotland Yard at the time, or is this what did Scotland Yard know who he was?
He was under the radar. They didn't know. They didn't know who he was.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he was quite a respectable, upstanding figure, so he wasn't even suspected.
Okay.
That's interesting. You know, just crazy. So now, what do you plan on? Do you have any influences on your writing?
Yeah, my bank. And I need to pay my mortgage.
Well, but it's honest. Now,
I'm with Dr. Johnson, who said, "No man save a dog wrote except for money."
Yeah, we're not doing literature. So, so tell us, what's your website so listeners can find you?
But Nigel Cawthorne, all one word, at
Nigel Cawthorne.com.
That's what.
Right. Perfect. Okay, and we'll have that on our website.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed talking to you. You're quite funny, and we'll have your website and books up on ours, so people listening can do one click and check you out. Again, thank you for taking some time, Nigel Cawthorne.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.